Hey everyone, welcome back. The executive search industry is experiencing a fundamental transformation as artificial intelligence moves from supporting role to leading performer. Some reports show that AI will handle 95% of initial candidate screening, revolutionizing how we identify and evaluate top-tier talent. Yet this shift raises critical questions. Can AI virtual recruiters truly understand the nuances of executive leadership? How do we balance algorithmic efficiency with the human insights essential for C-suite placement? Today, I'm joined by Bill Casco, President and CEO of Frontline Source Group, a nationally recognized staffing and recruitment firm with over 21 years of industry leadership. We'll explore the emergence of AI-powered virtual recruiters and if they can amplify human relationship building and cultural assessment for organizations. To support the show, click subscribe and like on this video, and visit chrishood.com/show to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media or email me directly at show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Show, where experts, creators, and changemakers discuss how AI and technology are changing how we work, live, and connect. Unscripted, unfiltered, and unhyped. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Bill, it's taken a little while to get us to this point, but welcome to the show.
No, I'm excited, Chris. Thanks, man. Thanks for hanging in there. This AWS thing is affecting all of us in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to kick things off, would you mind introducing yourself?
You bet. Bill Casco, I am the president, CEO, I guess founder of Frontline Source Group. So we are a professional executive search and staffing agency nationwide, headquartered in Dallas. Been around for 21 years now. So yeah, excited.
Very exciting. And I think one of the things that we want to dive in today is a side project, or maybe it's part of what you're offering, is some AI tools. I would love to hear more about that. How about if we start right there? What is it that you're actually building?
Well, you know, we have been on that cutting edge, it's kind of understanding the industry to understand cutting edge, right? And so ever since the inception, it's been trying to stay a step ahead. So it could be as simple as the online chat function, right? We had that 20 years ago before everybody else had it. But the AI part right now that we're in the middle of, you know, that really started with automation, maybe call it 4 years ago, looking at things, changing it up. But then we started testing the real waters of AI and the adaptive conversations with recruiters. So the first version of actually having phone calls being made by the AI agent, now that we call it. It's funny too, we've gone from the AI to now calling it different things, kind of like a copier, you know, was originally called a Xerox and then it came the copier. I feel like it's the same. Maybe it's like Corona and then it became COVID. I don't know. But we're on right now. We call it version 7 of an AI true recruiter who is interactive, a voice act. It's like holding conversation with an individual to do full recruiting, that alleviates just the amount of legwork that's taking place. You know, it's interesting because as AI has grown and it's supposed to speed things up and make things better for everybody, then you have certain areas and certain things that now it's like bogging down your system. And so we figured out how to allow us to cover more ground by having the AI recruiter do a lot of the pre-screening of phone calls, but it's so real sounding and it's getting so much better as time goes on that it's really an adaptive conversation taking place. And I commented to somebody recently that I went through it and felt like, wow, that thing asked better questions than I would ask. And it was able to hold a real conversation and pivot and move. And boy, it's just getting better and better, but it's still missing, you know, that human touch and the human piece of it. I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime. Maybe I will. I don't know. But it's pretty cool stuff going on right now. And embracing it, I think, is vital to everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you touched on it, and maybe that's a good way to segue into, you know, you tried it yourself. Obviously, you're trying your own product, but what has been the general feedback that you've received in terms of how people are relating to it? Or do they enjoy it? Or are they skeptical? Like, where are people sitting in this?
That's a really good kind of conversation piece anyway, because that's part of the evolution of it, right? And so if I go back to version one, her name was Jamie, and Jamie had hiccups. I mean, Jamie would ask the wrong question. It was the proverbial, you know, the old record player getting caught and repeating and repeating and repeating. So that experience was from a client side user interface that was upsetting, frustrated. People were like pissed off. I mean, they didn't want to talk to it. Well, number one, they didn't understand. They're kind of scared of it. We were really in the beginning stages of this. Now, fast forward to today, they're more appreciative of it. They understand it more. They're not afraid of it as more. We've been talking about it a lot. It's more encompassing today in the basic things that we're doing. Just no different than when, if you think about ChatGPT when it first came out, and all of us were like, oh yeah, we'll play with it. And then now today we realize, oh, well, it can actually help us write things, and we can use it to this, and we're adapting into that. I actually go back to even, if you think about like when Alexa came out in the beginning, like we all had to have it because we wanted to see, would she really talk back? And then we went through a phase where we would ask Alexa questions just to kind of test it, like, who's your boyfriend or something, and see how she would respond. That's that time that we went through maybe 12 months ago. But today, it's become more of that automated phone system and understanding, how do we adapt with it? How do we work through it? How do we not get pissed off because we can't get to a representative? But what we found is that if we express to someone right from the get-go, right from the beginning, I'm an AI virtual agent. So this conversation, I may make mistakes and almost joke about it. When we've gone back to listen, it's interesting that the people are like, oh, that's okay, I understand. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. They're holding a conversation, but that's because we're starting to adapt. And that's part of the evolution, going back to maybe the microwave, right? How many bags of popcorn did we burn with the microwave until we figured it out? And then after we did, the microwave makers figured out they probably need a button that says that. And I think that's where we're going with all of this, is that people are learning to adapt, and they're not as afraid anymore as they were. They're still worried. But even that's, I think, overrated. That's a whole nother discussion. But they're becoming more comfortable with the product as it grows, as we all use it in different ways to adapt around it. And then what we're finding from it is we're able to gather information that makes it convenient. So that experience for a job seeker is better because they know they're having some type of a conversation that's being recorded and the data is being transmitted to someone. Instead of going into a resume black hole, at least they're feeling like they're interacting with people. So that experience to us and for individuals is really, really important that we figure it out as an industry, first of all, but then just the human interaction piece of it, and then the respect back to people. I think there's been so much around that it was important that we fix, that it'll get better as time goes on.
Yeah. Well, there's two components to this that I want to dive in with you, and you've already touched on one, which I appreciate. And that is around the transparency of what's happening. Like, I fully believe that as you express, hey, this is an automated system, if you inform them up front, like, I might get mistakes, that people right now are a little bit more forgiving. At least they understand. As opposed to, you don't tell them this, you masquerade it as being a real person, and then there potentially could be a little backlash, you know, from that process. And you've already touched on it, that you're probably seeing the same results, right?
Yeah. And I think that's something that as time goes on, I mean, I would expect at some point we're going to have some government regulation come into this, right? Because we already know that the masking that's behind it, the scams, the phone calls, we're all concerned about that. Look, I get it. And I think that down the road, we're going to see some type of an indicator to tell us I'm not actually speaking to a human. But what we found is that if we have that conversation up front and make it, I don't want to call it a warm and fuzzy, but that's kind of what it is, that you feel comfortable, then you're going to have a better interaction and we're going to get a better response rate of people conversing. Now, one of the things that we did different, that we do different today than what we did 2 years ago with version one, is that in that case, the outreach we were doing was automated. So someone would apply to, actually, that's not true. What we did originally was we embedded the agents into our internal database system to make outbound phone calls to people that weren't aware, number one, they were going to get a phone call, but number two, that it was coming from a computer, let's say. And that was a mistake, but the technology wasn't there yet. And so today it's been reversed into a way that they're coming into our system, the way that we've taken the approach. They're coming into our system as someone new. They're receiving our communication back to them as we normally did. But in this case, asking them and informing them that if they would like to have a conversation immediately, here's a link to click and we will connect you with our virtual recruiter who will go through some basics of our screening process. And so that allows them to click that, at which point Joy calls them back or sends a text even. It's a call, a text, where she's able to ask, are you available now? And if not, they can say, no, but can you call me back in an hour? And she will be like, sure, absolutely. So it's awesome, but it's also available 24 hours a day. So if you have an individual who is working, we place pharmacy people as an example, or you know, in the medical field, they're working unusual hours. Some of them, you know, they get home 1, 2 in the morning, and it's not convenient for them to have a conversation even at 3 in the afternoon. They're tired. They got to get some sleep. But you know, at 1 and 2 in the morning, they're available. I can't get a recruiter in an office to stay up to do interviews at 2 in the morning, but they can have a conversation with the virtual recruiter. And I've been amazed at the number of people that do phone calls at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, or someone who gets up early and they start their day at 6 a.m. And they go, you know what? 6 a.m. is very convenient for me. Not for me, but for them it is. And so it's been fantastic to make that experience better, because recruiting as an industry, just we don't get a good rap. I mean, and it's because we don't look at the experience for the individual.
Yeah. I think this is a good way to also bring up point number two that I have, and that is perception, right? So again, you touched on it where if you are proactively reaching out to people who may not realize that it's some sort of AI system contacting, there might be some frustration. If I am the client, right, and I am your customer, and I am making the choice on my own to engage with you, knowing that I'm engaging with an AI system, well, then I've set my expectation. That is my perception. I'm reaching out specifically and I'm agreeing to having that conversation. Yet what we're also seeing is that, you know, potentially in a recruitment type of process, I'm looking for a job. I reach out to you. I know I'm going to talk to an AI system. The AI system helps me and I believe I'm going to go off and get a job. The flip side of this is that we are now seeing several companies who are using AI systems, avatars, you know, voice agents to actually conduct the interview. And that process, I think, is getting a lot of backlash right now. Because look, if I'm applying to your company, I would like to sit down and speak with a real person. If I'm not speaking to a real person in this process, then I feel like you don't value my time. So again, two different perspectives, two different use cases, but all falling within this kind of same technology that you're working with.
Yeah. And that's really interesting as well, because we've had conversations about that. And I've actually been asked about it by a client, because they said, hey, we were reading about your AI recruiter. Is somebody actually physically going to, you know, human to human conversation? And I'm like, absolutely. I mean, our philosophy behind it is that's never going to go away. All we're trying to do is to ensure that that initial screen that takes place, because of volume or speed to market, maybe is a better way to even look at it, is facilitated in a way that's respectable to the individual. But by disclosing that, we're always up front. Sending someone an email to say, hey, fill out these questions, I just don't find that to be a very nice touch, right? Because it's very flat. So at least having, from an audible standpoint, that conversation, to know that the person and what they're saying is being recorded, it's being transmitted back into the system, it's going to be reviewed, we tell them that, but this is the first step. For us, we can cover more ground. And so part of that is, how do we cover more ground? And that really backs up because of the recruiting process. So recruiting 20 years ago, we would joke and say, you know, you cast your fishing rod out there into the pool and you pull back 20 individuals. Well, today it's crazy. It's not like that. There isn't a pool. And so we have to outreach sometimes to 150, 200 possibilities to get one to come back. How do we do that? And then the gateway that's been put up in front of us, that firewall that people have put up to protect themselves from scammers and everybody else, is more difficult to get to. We used to just make one phone call, right? Because why? We didn't have email and we didn't have text and people didn't have cell phones. So we had to make a phone call to their home phone, leave it on their answering machine, get a phone call back. Otherwise, we had to send it through the mail. Well, as you start adding in all these different ways that we now communicate in an outreach, email, text, voicemails, phone calls, social media. I mean, you hit all of those at one time. People are bombarded, but I still got to get through to all of them to get a response back. I mean, I don't know if you have kids that are in that age or people that work for you in that age, but I can remember not too long ago calling someone, leaving a message what I needed, and I got a call back and I said, hey, what'd you need? Well, I just left you like a 5-minute detailed message. Oh, I didn't check my voicemail. I just saw I had a missed call. Like, okay. So you have to omni-channel market to get something back. And so that virtual recruiter, that helps get to, as I like to say, you know, how many licks does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Pop? Well, it gets me there quicker.
You know, a few weeks ago, I was having a conversation with somebody and I made the kind of bold suggestion that we are moving into an era where resumes are no longer needed, where most of the resumes out there right now are being generated by AI and they're pretty much all fake and they're trying to game the system and any number of other factors. And the filtering systems are kind of scanning them. And at the end of the day, it's really, if you have a contact and you know somebody and you can get ahead of all of that, and you know, they're going to be first to get the interview. But if you think about how AI is able to assimilate information quickly, you could argue that instead of having a paper-based resume, I could now have an audio-based resume. Whereas instead of typing, as you said, instead of having a resume, uploading it, answering all the typical questions, going through those motions, and even fill in the space types of questions that you might have, if I had an AI system and it simply said, well, hey, great to meet you, Chris. Could you tell me about your current job or your last job? And I could sit there and basically explain it. The AI can then decipher all of the details from that and generate the exact same information and probably more accurate information, because then people are actually having to express what they've done and how they've achieved it.
Yeah.
And I can definitely see where we can easily get to a point where we're replacing the paper resume process with an audio, you know, introductory screening call that is powered by AI that will basically help us get pretty accurate representation of who the candidate is.
So it's interesting you bring that up. So one of the things that we have done also that I agree with you, I think that there's going to be a need because it's people just like to hold paper. They like to look at something, even if it's just a synopsis. So we've seen two things happen. One has been, I don't get paid by LinkedIn. I can promise you that. But the verification of information back to LinkedIn from employers today is through the roof. It is something they go back to, they look at it, and they're looking to see not only the activity, but verifying what's on paper and really utilizing information about their statements and just that background that is on LinkedIn. And they're utilizing that more than ever. The second piece is just like a video call that transcribes that whole information. One of the things that a lot of the AI products do today, and we utilize that with our voice over IP system that we use, which is through RingCentral, is a wonderful tool that they have that takes that conversation through our video call, transmits, copies all of everything, obviously, but then puts it into a synopsis that the recruiter, whoever's doing the call, we receive a copy of all of that, highlighting the points, going over that entire conversation, and actually creates it into it's a wonderful tool that we then can take, copy and use that we put into our synopsis and dossier when we present that individual, because it has really highlighted the skill set, the background, the information on the individual. So I think it's coming. It's just a matter of how is it going to translate? What is it going to do to populate into systems that go the next step, either in a presentation, a form for people to review, to look at? And that's part, again, of evolution of change. Because then you're looking at changing HR departments, the way that they operate, the way that companies look at things. And then, you know, it takes time. It's a generational thing too. We have plenty of clients that still want a physical resume to print out. They don't want digital. We still have people that want to receive one resume at a time. It's just, there's a lot of change, and it's the accuracy too. And the accuracy is a problem still of what's being conveyed that AI interprets, and then which platforms take it and then kind of almost make it into their own way of doing things, which is why you still need humans to review, to overview, to verify, to build. But it's coming. We all know it's coming. It's better than it was 2 years ago. I mean, think about that. It's way better. But, you know, you talk about receiving the resumes that are AI driven, that are AI focused. We get them every day. I don't understand why people are doing them. I got to be honest. We immediately can tell it's an AI email. I mean, don't send me, if you're a $150,000 a year controller, don't send me a professional resume and then have your email have a bunch of emojis in it. I don't want to see that. You don't stand out except to say you're just mass sending, and companies don't want that either. And so it's like, be smart about what you're doing. Utilize the technology to make it easier for you. Absolutely. Don't utilize it to make you look like a clown.
You know, in the...
Nothing against clowns, just saying, you know.
Yeah, I mean, nothing against clowns.
No.
You know, the other side of this voice-based system, we've already begun to play with in customer support call centers, which is sentiment analysis, right? Is allowing AI to analyze voice recognition in ways to determine, you know, are they happy? Are they upset? Are they, you know, mad? Whatever the case might be. And again, if I take the same concept of that and I apply it towards the screening or interviewing process, I potentially could find ways of determining, like, is this person genuinely excited about this job? You know, 100%. Is this person just going through the motion? Is this person aggravated because of, you know, I've often theorized, and this is a complete total sidetrack. So anybody who's listening, here's a free idea out there for somebody. But I've often theorized that I would be able to develop a voice analysis tool that would be able to work as a matchmaker. So for like online dating and dating services, where I could record your voice, get a sense of your personality, and then be able to match you against other voice rhythms that share similar traits. There's no difference than, you know, if we look at blind dating and the theory of, you know, unlocking visions with our ears. So if I could be able to match people together based on sound waves, there's really no difference between being able to match people's personalities, thoughts, feelings, whatever you want to say, into particular job roles and into functions. It just means moving that sentiment analysis from the call center place into the recruiting HR space.
So this is where I think we're going to have massive issues. And I think that's where, this is where we're going to run into discrimination issues that are going to pop up. It goes back to, and I don't know if you remember when like Facebook first came out in particular, even Indeed, LinkedIn, and we started having photos and pictures on things. And there was an entire uprising about discriminating because you can see who they are on a resume, right? And you were now discriminating because you could discriminate based on color, race, what gender, all these different factors. So then you go into the AI piece, which again, there's concern and you wonder, and now it becomes a matter of, okay, so let's say you had a disability and you have a hearing impediment that creates a speech impediment that comes along. And now your voice isn't matching up to your skill on that. And it's the Wild West right now because your idea, I think, is phenomenal. But what's going to happen, because this is what normally does, is that our government's going to get involved in this and it's going to kind of get screwed up. Now, they're going to come in to protect the ones that need to be protected. And I'm completely in agreement with that. But I hope there's a way that they can embrace the technology to figure out how to still protect and allow that to go forward. That's why I'm not sure what's going to happen. Because we've had these conversations, recruiters and I will talk about this and be like, are we going to be out of a job in 10 years? I don't know. Because if they do something like what you're saying, and we're able to gauge emotion, but not only gauge, but then respond in a way that is having empathy, then now we're literally creating a robot that's a human and acting like a human to do that. But then does it create a problem if the human touch isn't involved, that we are in some way discriminating against a person, either because of the interaction or something or communication? I don't know. I mean, I think that's like, it literally is the Wild West right now, that there's a lot of unknowns. Because I go into the whole thing too about a video interview. And there's been argument about that. Like, you're discriminating because you're, no, I'm not discriminating. I mean, it's no different than sitting in person with someone. But you acknowledge that now it's not a human. So can that non-human discriminate in a way? So what if you had an AI agent doing a physical picture interview, and could they discriminate? And are they able to discriminate because they're not a human? And then there isn't a penalty. Like, there isn't anything yet doing that. Now, there's plenty of stuff that's taken place saying that the AI is somehow discriminating, but it's not yet been defined as to what this is going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, well, a lot of these cases, though, you could be able to build better guardrails, right? You could build systems that remove some of that bias. So as an example, if somebody has a speech impediment, you could filter that out and no one would know, right? Because the AI is just going to simulate whatever that resume dialogue output becomes. And you don't have the video elements. You don't have the imagery so that you can make the human-based, you know, kind of decisions. Like, all of that can actually be improved, I think, with AI to a point. But here's an example of kind of how I think of things differently. to the point that you just made, like most organizations will conduct an interview and it will be a video interview. And yes, we're not supposed to discriminate. You and I right now are on video having a conversation. And I can see you have our own thoughts and whatever the case might be. I've often argued that what you need to do with any type of interview practice within your organization is have somebody not related to the role do the interview and then share their findings, removing some of the, you know, the descriptors. So instead of saying he or she, you say they, right? Like you can do that. And then that way the hiring team does not have any information about who the individual is. But too often in these organizations, the hiring manager is having the interviews and making the decisions and doing that. If you could remove that in some way by having a third party actually conduct the interviews, then the hiring manager simply gets, here's three candidates, A, B, and C. I have no idea what their names are. I have no idea who they are. I have no idea what they look like. I have no idea what they sound like. All I'm getting is some sort of calculation in terms of quality fit. I have to then make the decision. Now, I know there's a lot of people who are like, well, I'm not going to hire somebody if I don't know if I get along with them. Again, that's a bias within itself. And if we can start to strip some of that away due to technology, I think it's, you know, it's definitely worth exploring.
I'm with you 100%. I think the other part, I totally agree. Because at the end of the day, organizations want to lower their cost to acquire talent, right? And so they're looking at ways to lower cost, but they also have to look at mitigating risk when it comes to all of these rules, regulations, and what they have to follow from a guideline standpoint. So all of it kind of plays in together. If AI can lower their cost to acquire in a way, and they can functionally figure out how to move forward with it, great. If it's pushed down their throat in a certain way or whatever, then it's different. If they can see that their cost, look, every company's cost to acquire talent is going up. Same reason it's difficult for us. They have to touch, reach out, spend more time to try to find one person than they did 10 years ago. So everyone is looking at it. And when you're running an HR department, whether your company is 20 people or 20,000, you're trying to figure, it doesn't generate revenue. It's a non-revenue generating part of your business. And there are times when it's looked at as just it's cost us money. So they're always looking at how can we generate something to show an ROI on what we're doing. The more they can lower that cost to acquire, and the more that they can bring and utilize tools, that's what everybody's going to look at. And I think it's not just even because the voice thing, I do like that. And it does have a lot to do with it. The question comes into play, how does it work? And then how is the government going to screw it up, basically? Because it is a great idea. But you and I both know that somehow they will come in and do the change and then we'll have to adapt and change. But I mean, even if it's a first screen that's done that way, that indicates something to move forward, and then you have the human piece involved on it, then maybe it speeds the process up. So no, I think it's a great idea.
Well, as you said, we're in the wild, wild west and yeah. Everything is changing. And you know, what the next 2 years, what 2026 holds for us is going to change everything.
6 months.
Guaranteed. So, well, hey, Bill, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, there's two great ways. You can use your ChatGPT AI tool or whatever. Go find us on the internet. So our website is just the name of our company, frontlinesourcegroup.com, or on LinkedIn. Go check out our company page on LinkedIn. Follow us there. If you heard me on here with Chris, please go and send me an invite on LinkedIn. Connect with me. Love to hear about that as well. Point you in the right direction. All the social media everywhere. And that's the thing too with AI today. I would just tell you, be on LinkedIn, be on the right tools, even if you're not looking. Just be on things that you are ahead of the curve in case something comes up. You never know.
Appreciate it so much. We'll make sure that people can find you in the show notes. Thank you again for all your insights and thoughts. Great conversation.
Thanks, Chris.
And for everybody else, I appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you hit the like on the subscribe button and everything else so that you can stay in touch with us. And otherwise, we will see you again next week on The Chris Hood Show.